Our next presentation is Weed Management and Crop Response when Intercropping Watermelon and Cotton by PM Urey at University of Georgia.
So some very innovative growers in South Georgia are now intercropping cucurbits and cotton, and this practice has taken off from 40 acres in 2010 to several thousand acres this past year. Now, realizing we're at a cotton conference and not a watermelon conference, I want to just briefly describe watermelon production in South Georgia, and then we'll talk about intercropping. So production begins in early February with land prep and tillage. Sometime mid-February, our growers begin to fumigate. Now, immediately following fumigation, they lay a plastic mulch over the bed. This traps the fumigant in the bed, allowing various pests to be killed. Now, about 3 weeks later, they come out and they make transplant holes in that plastic mulch. And immediately after doing so, they hand transplant seedlings that have been grown out in the greenhouse. Now, beginning sometime in June, they hand harvest watermelon, and harvest may range from 1 to 3 times depending on market value at the time of maturity. Now, our growers often double crop their watermelon with grain sorghum, and a lot of our growers have an issue with grain sorghum, and that net returns are often marginal. And especially when you're planting in mid-July, you can see a reduction in grain sorghum yields. So they started looking at other options, and one such option was the intercropping of watermelon and cotton. And they like this because net returns on cotton in general are greater than grain sorghum, and also there's shared resources between the two crops. Land prep and irrigation are already in place for the watermelon, so their cotton's just freeloading essentially. This can set them up for increased returns and offer some stability in production. For example, if watermelon markets plummet, they still can harvest a decent cotton crop potentially. But one of their major issues, and in Georgia in general, are amaranth species, specifically glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth. And for example, a 6 smooth pigweed per meter row can reduce cucurbit yield greater than 90%. And just like in monoculture production of cotton, if we don't maintain early season glyphosate-resistant control of glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth, we're going to be battling it throughout the season, and most of the time we lose. And we also wanted to just reduce the amount of hand weeding time we have in the field for our growers as well. Now, in 2013, we discussed something very similar to watermelon cotton intercropping. We discussed cantaloupe cotton intercropping, and we found that a etafluralin plus pomespan based system applied pre-transplant gives us adequate Palmer control in this system. We have the potential for cantaloupe injury, but when we intercrop, we don't see a reduction in cantaloupe yield. We did see a reduction in cotton yield of about 14%. However, we were still able to increase our growers' profitability per acre by 17-18% when compared to cantaloupe grown in monoculture. So we wanted to do something very similar with watermelon cotton intercropping. So we had two objectives. The first was to identify herbicide systems to manage glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth in watermelon cotton intercropping production, and two, determine the profitability of such a system when compared to a monoculture of the two. So we had two trials in 2011, one in 2012. Our design was a randomized complete block consisting of 3 herbicide systems and a non-treated control in our intercropping. And our herbicide systems when we intercropped included etafluralin pre-transplant, etafluralin plus pomespan pre-transplant, and etafluralin plus pomespan plus Terbicil applied pre-transplant. Now, to serve as a comparison against our intercropping systems, we had a weed-free monoculture of watermelon and cotton. Now, we had 2 monoculture planting dates for cotton, and that's because our intercropping cotton was planted 3 to 4 weeks earlier than we prefer it to be in Georgia. So we had an ideal plant date of cotton, which was sometime around May 10th to May 15th. Our pre-transplant herbicides were broadcast over the entire plot area, and this resulted in herbicide residue on the plastic mulch. And this residue has been noted to cause transplant injury at the time of to our seedling watermelons. So we used overhead irrigation to rinse the plastic mulch free of residue, and this also activated our pre-transplant herbicides. Our plots were 6 by 50 feet. We transplanted our watermelon on 72-inch centers. When our melon vines reached the edge of the plastic mulch, we came in and we planted our cotton on 36-inch spacing. And this timing for our cotton planting was about 18 to 21 days after transplanting our watermelon. Now, it's important to understand that we manage for our intercropping systems for watermelon production until harvest, and that's because we had roughly $2,900 an acre tied up in our watermelon crop, significantly more than our cotton crop. We harvested our watermelon 2 to 3 times in these studies, beginning in the third week of June and finishing up by July the 4th. Once we were done with watermelon, we burned down the vines with glyphosate followed by glufosinate 7 days later. And then we lay by with diuron and MSMA prior to canopy closure. And we left the plastic mulch down in these studies until we were done harvesting the cotton. We recorded Palmer control, crop injury, watermelon vine lengths, cotton height, and yield. We calculated our crop value per acre. And we analyzed our data using ProcMix. And we separated our means using Fisher's protected LC when appropriate. So our watermelon growth and development was not influenced by intercropping or our herbicide systems, and that was reflected in watermelon vine length. Here we have centimeters on the left-hand axis. Our monoculture vine lengths are in blue. Our intercropping vine lengths are in yellow. And regardless of system, we had similar lengths, vine lengths. Looking at Palmer control prior to watermelon harvest, here we have percent control on the left-hand axis. Our intercropping herbicide systems along the bottom axis. When we use ethyl-florid alone, we have poor Palmer amaranth control. When we include fumespin in the system, we increase our control to 91 to 95%. Our non-treated controls had an average of 160 Palmer amaranth. When we included fumespin in the system, we reduced that down to about 5 or 6 Palmer amaranth per plot. So it's not perfect, but it gives us much greater control than what we're used to. When we look at total watermelon yield with pounds per acre on the left-hand axis, again, our blue bar represents monoculture yield, yellow bars representing intercropping yields. When we use a fumespin-based system, we have similar watermelon yields to monoculture. When we use ethyl-florid alone, we have poor weed control, and we see a reduction in watermelon yield. And the same is true for our non-treated control. So now I want to talk about how our cotton fared in this system. In systems that we used Turboseal, we ended up causing complete crop death. The cotton came up about 2 weeks after emerging. We started seeing some symptoms, and by 6 weeks, the plants were dead. Now, the label for Turboseal or Cinbar has an 18-month rotation restriction, and after seeing this, I absolutely believe it. So when we look at cotton height prior to harvest with centimeters on the left-hand axis, our monoculture heights for our systems are in blue, intercropping heights are in yellow. We did see a difference between our two planting date cotton heights, and simply we believe this is because intercropping planting dates were 3 to 4 weeks earlier than our ideal planting date. But I want to point out that when we use the ethyl-florid or ethyl-florid based system plus fumespin based system, we see a reduction in cotton height when compared to our monoculture intercropping planting date, showing that there's some level of competition between the two crops. Looking at Palmer control prior to cotton harvest, here's percent control on the left-hand axis. When we use ethyl-florid alone, pre-transplant, we follow that up with glufosinate and glyphosate to kill our vines. And a lay-by system, we have poor weed control late in the season. But when we use a fumespin in the pre-transplant system and maintain early season Palmer amaranth control, we're able to maintain good Palmer amaranth control later in the season. It's not perfect, but again, it's better than 40% control. When we look at cotton yield with pounds per acre on the left-hand axis, and our monoculture cotton yields are in blue again, yellow is our intercropping cotton yields. No difference between our planting dates for our monoculture, but when we use ethyl-florid plus fumespin pre-transplant, we do see a slight reduction in cotton yield when compared to our intercropping planting date in monoculture. Now, our non-treated control in our ethyfluorine-only system, we have poor weed control. Therefore, we could not harvest the cotton. We just essentially did not have any cotton. And again, our Turbosil treatments, we had killed our cotton, so we didn't have anything to harvest there. So even though we saw a reduction in cotton yield when we intercrop, how does this fare for our growers? And so we calculated crop value per acre by taking the total value of products generated and subtracting the variable cost. For our watermelon, we assigned a value of 17 cents a pound. Our variable costs were $2,900 an acre. For cotton, our value was 82 cents a pound. And our variable costs for our monoculture was $565 an acre, while we reduced that in our intercropping to $365 an acre for an overlap in resources with the watermelon. Now, looking at the crop value per acre with dollars per acre on the left-hand axis, when we use this ethyfluorine plus fumespin-based system and obtain good Palmer amaranth control, we increase our crop value per acre 14% when compared to watermelon growing in monoculture, and greater than 1,000% when compared to cotton growing in monoculture. So in summary, ethyfluorine plus fumespin-based system, we have excellent crop tolerance in these studies. We did have good Palmer amaranth control. It was not perfect, but it was good. We did have some competition going on, but our watermelon were not influenced. However, cotton yield was reduced, but we were still able to increase our crop value per acre 14% when compared to monoculture watermelon production, and greater than 1,000% when compared to cotton monoculture production. So in conclusion, intercropping can help our growers be more profitable when we obtain adequate control of glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth. And in this case, we showed that we could. Now, fumespin is not currently registered for use in watermelon, nor is ethyfluorine registered for use in cotton. So we're going to continue. I think fumespin is getting close to being registered, but not yet. For future research, we're going to continue to look for future herbicides. I know Culpepper's, he's gave our growers a lot of options in the vegetable world with herbicides. And so we're going to continue going that route. We're going to develop integrated weed management systems. Our growers, they still like to cultivate early in the vegetable season. So how do herbicides fall into that? And then last, we're going to continue to evaluate other intercropping systems. How creative you are limits what can work. We've already tried watermelon, cantaloupe, or squash intercrop with soybean, peanut, or cotton, and it was a good idea on paper, but it was terrible to manage. But it was a good experience. So with that said, I thank you for your time. If you have any questions or comments, I'll take those now. And for those of you, that know Stanley Culpepper, this is his version of frost management in South Georgia. So just ask him about it sometime. Yes.
On a commercial scale, do you think the reduction in cotton yield would be due to competition or damage from your cutting crews? Or is that an issue? I know in research spots you can control that a little bit. If you're hand harvesting, are they damaging the cotton significantly?
So the question was, do we feel like it's competition in a commercial environment that's reducing cotton yield, or is it our harvesting methods stumping the cotton down, reducing yield? So when I first got to Georgia and started looking at this, that was one of our first questions. And we designed this really neat study. We thought we were going to do it. And then we go out and see that the guys harvesting, and the cotton is still flexible when they're harvesting. It's not going to break off or anything. And there was minimal injury. The cotton stood back up within a day or so. It looked good. I feel as if there is any injury, that it's early in the cotton's growth and it can compensate for any sort of stomping or thinning of stand. So I feel, and I didn't show any pictures of it, but these vines grow all over the top of the cotton, and the cotton really doesn't initiate or doesn't grow really, really fast or hard until we desiccate those vines around July 4th time frame. So. Yes, sir.
What's the fuming that the watermelon guys are using?
So there's, of course, there was the old standard methyl bromide, and now Culpepper-Nim, is it the trifecta? Or that's one option. And then I don't know if they use DMDS in that system. Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
Thank our speaker.